Oral History, interviewing Albert Raisman, continuation of the interview.
I was intrigued by the fact that you were on a committee for athletics. Was this something you chose? Is this something they knew about you as an athlete or your interest in athletics?
Interest in athletics and from the School of Business. I think, if I recall, they would have someone on the committee from each of the schools.
Oh.
And I guess volunteered or accepted that position and enjoyed it. I took several trips with the team, the basketball team at that time, and took my son along once to Dayton for a game.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very interesting.
Was this basketball or
basketball?
All kinds of athletics?
Well, they had other sports, but I was strictly
that was
involved.
Your. Uh-huh. Okay, let's go back for a minute to the Hill because there was something I still want to talk to you about. We had talked the last time about your family having moved from the Hill while you were at the university to Squirrel Hill. Now, was this a general exodus from one area to another by Jews? Was this out of economic raising? What motivated people to move out of the Hill? Because they had all that. You said we had so many friends and we knew everybody.
Well, slowly but surely, as economic conditions changed and people began to make a little bit more money, they began to look at other areas. People from down lower Center Avenue began to move first. Was getting crowded down there, the streets were narrow and so forth. And then I believe the time came that we wanted to improve ourselves, I guess, and Dad looked for another little house, which he did, and said it was on Squirrel Hill, so we moved to Squirrel Hill.
Was it because it was already populated with Jews?
Oh, yes.
Oh, it was.
It was. We were not a forerunner there at all.
Because East End also had Jews,
right,
I understand.
Right. They went in two different directions. They went to the east and they went to Squirrel Hill.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And most of your friends moved that
way? They were already had moved. They had already moved or moved shortly after us. We also had some friends in Oakland who had already lived in Oakland. And it was closer to Squirrel Hill, was closer to Oakland than it was up to the end.
And that's when you joined up with Rhoda Shaw?
No, I didn't join up with Rhoda Shaw until I came back to the service.
I see. With your wife.
I didn't join anywhere during those years because Mother and Dad belonged to Polytechnic.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And that's where I went to services with them. Mm-hmm. When I my involvement with the reform became apparent when returning from the service with my wife, who just felt that conservatism and orthodoxy was not for her, and she didn't want to be separated, and so we joined her.
Did you have any difficulty making that transition?
No.
Because you had been brought up quite orthodox atmosphere.
From that standpoint, the things that went on in the orthodox and conservative schools seemed to be not in keeping with my own thoughts as to what religion should be. I like quiet, I like the serenity of religious thought and feeling, and that was not apparent except when the rabbi spoke. I mean, everybody got up and tried to outdo each other when they were doing the services. I don't know, just one of those things. I had no trouble with
it. Even.
That's where we made most of our friends.
My
wife and I, upon return from the service, made most of our friends.
There was no conflict in terms of your parents and you in regard to your making change to reform.
They're very liberal. Anything I wanted to do was fine, just so I went.
I see. And you also mentioned that you and your wife became very active in the young people's group there, and I wondered what motivated you to get in there, because there are a lot of young people today who, you know, may join up with a synagogue or a temple, but not necessarily become as active. What was the motivation?
Well, I believe the first motivation was the fact that having been at war and not knowing whether I'd come back from a mission, and recognizing how the chaplains had services all the time, and the boys were flocking to those services before and after missions. You began to feel that you had to have somebody to talk to and someone to pray to and pray for. And I saw many of my friends killed in the service, and I just felt that I wanted to be part of it, because not because I'm looking for any covet or anything, but I just wanted to go, that's all. And Adele felt the same way. She never knew when I was coming back or not. And so, because I was an accountant, they asked me to, you know, be a treasurer, you know, and then from that time on, then we moved right up the ladder. Well, we met most of our friends there at Rotor Shalom, young, the junior congregation it was called, and at one time had over 400 members.
Now, your social group, pre-going into Rodef Shalom, were they also coming along as you did, interested in
some were. I mean, I have friends who are very close to me who are not active in anything at all. They may be active in the Federation, but they are not active in the religious organizations. And, you know, you have some people who feel that that's a substitute. That using the Federation and the JCC and fundraising and so forth is a substitute for religious involvement. But Adele and I don't feel that way. If we miss a service on a weekend, whether it's Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, something's missing. We don't say Kaddish at least once a week.
So you had some kind of draw to that, and this is a way to work it out, to become as active as you were, because you said you really, in essence, I get a sense that you were forming that group.
Who no, the together? Group was well formed by the time I got there.
Who and was the rabbi?
Rabbi was Dr. Friot, with several assistants.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't come to our involvement, not in junior congregations much, but the assistants did. We met every single assistant that ever came here and went on to be top-rate rabbis from the day we got back from the service.
Was there any one rabbi that you were particularly close with?
Well, there was a Walter Jacob, of course, came rather early. Fred Schwartz was early with us. And any number of rabbis down the line, the minute they came in, we became friendly with them.
Mm-hmm. You and your wife.
That's right.
So you really formed...
Rothman. Rabbi Rothman was here. He became a top rabbi at West Hartford. Silver was here. He went off to Harold Silver went to West Hartford, and Rothman went up to Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
They're both retired now.
Yeah. Well, Harold Silver first came out to Southwest.
No, he's with us first.
Yeah, but I mean after you, before you went up.
Yes. And then from there, he made the call.
Have you maintained those relationships?
Sure, we see them all the time. Because I go to the Union of American Hebrew Congregation biennials, and the rabbis come there.
I see.
We have a whole cadre of rabbis who say, Dale, how are you? Dale, how are you?
Were your sons married there?
Yes, sons were married. And my youngest son married a girl whose father is very Orthodox. And Rabbi Landis asked by Dr. Jacob to co-officiate, but we had a kosher meal at the temple, and it was a tough struggle, because some of my Masatanim friends didn't want to come to temple because they thought I wasn't kosher enough, and it was being prepared by prime kosher in the best way possible. And I remember one evening he called me and said, six of my friends decided not to come. And I said, Abe, I said, give me their names. I'm going to call them and tell them if they don't come, they don't have to come to anything.
You were
they can't come to the dinner. They can't come to the dinner, they don't have to come to the wedding. They all came. They had a great time.
Yeah. So you helped them.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. tell me, you mentioned your activities. I know at Rosh Shalom. Were you active in the school there too?
School?
Yes.
Well,
the school board.
No, the board, there is no school board. There's a board of trustees and there's a chairman of the committee for the religious school. And they report to the board all the time.
Oh, I see. That's right.
Mm-hmm. My particular involvement was other than the religious school. Mm-hmm. And then when I became president, then I was ex officio of all of them.
You'd made a beautiful statement the last time that you had tried to teach your sons that they either give of themselves or give of their money community-wise. And you gave both in this community, evidently.
I did.
And I just wondered, for example, in UJF, how were you motivated to be a community person at UJF?
Yeah.
And you were already active.
I just felt that I was blessed and in a position to help. And if I could do it, nobody gives beyond their means. Mm-hmm. Many people don't give it at all. They don't give anything near to what they should. I always felt that if I had the wherewithal to do it, I was...
But where did it come from? Where do you think it came from, that feeling of community on the part of the Jewish community? It could be any number of things you could have been active in, all right, because you're that kind of person. You don't know.
I think that's hard to explain, really. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I just wondered,
you're either born with it, or you feel it, or you learn it. It has to go back to my parents and grandparents, that's all I can tell you. Because I recall that my dad... The place where he worked had a store on Fifth Avenue. And he came home one day and said, Mr. Spector came along Fifth Avenue to everybody to collect for the UJF. You know, and I gave him $5. $5 was a giant amount of money.
Yes.
And he said, I have to help somebody else. But he came back, he came from the old country where we knew where the pogroms were and how you were being really taken advantage of. And here was freedom.
That was your dad, but you weren't.
Well,
you didn't have that kind of upbringing.
No,
so
it's
the question,
true. I had freedom, but
I just felt
if you have the ability and the willingness, and you know other people are worse off. That's all I can tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Last evening we went to the concert, and I saw a gentleman. I won't mention his name. I say 4 months ago he was an actor. Involved person. I saw him yesterday. He looked like Jeff Warnbill. I mean, you know, I go home and say to myself, and tell, you know, we're very, very fortunate. That's all.
That we have our health.
That's right. So I don't know how it came about. I'm pleased that it is. That's all I can tell you.
But you've been a devoted member. You mentioned, too, that there's a family joke that if the Raisins are not in the Chronicle one week or another, what's happened?
That's right.
And I wondered at the time you were growing up, what kind of publications, Jewish publications, were available here in Pittsburgh?
Well,
are there such things?
Pittsburgh was involved only as far as the Jewish Forward, you know, the Jewish Daily Forward, which came from New York, printed in New York. And the rest was the old Chronicle, you know, the Jewish Chronicle. There were two papers at that time. There were two competing papers, the Chronicle and another paper. I can't recall the name, but then they merged, and then from that came the
today's Jewish Chronicle. But that was named something else in the past, but I don't remember what it was.
What do we have now? We have the Jewish Chronicle. But it was the forerunner of that was what?
I don't recall.
I do. And it was Milt Sussman was in it.
Right.
It was printed on very heavy paper.
Was your name also in that?
No. I back in those days, I was not involved very much at all.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 20 years, I would say, that we've been with the Bell name. president of Ladies Hospital Aid, your committee,
But do you remember the paper at that time as being influential in the Jewish community life?
Oh, yes. It was. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. People looked to that for what was going on.
Marriages and the engagements and deaths and information of one kind or another, contemporary information, editorials, columns. Mm-hmm. Everybody looks for their names.
Right.
All you have to do, as you know, is print a book, and so nobody reads it. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, someone calls up and says, "How come my name was missing?" But everybody does read it. Mm-hmm.
Tell me, in the years you've worked, many years with different organizations and different Jewish communities, are there people who stand out in your mind as being very significant, either as people who may have had influence on you and your thinking?
I would say that some of the directors of the organizations, some of the rabbis.
Do you remember any names of people
that
you would say have special meaning for you?
Involvement with the School of Advanced Jewish Studies with
Dr. Kessler.
He was a tremendous educator. And I fell under his influence because I knew how devoted he was to education and couldn't be bothered with the financial things that were always harassing him.
Mm-hmm.
Budgets to him meant little or nothing. I mean, he just felt that, why are we spending so much money on this and on that and not on education? And and Dr. Freehoff, tremendous influence on me. I had the opportunity as president of Junior Congregation, Brotherhood, and the Senior Congregation to be with them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And come in, the door was always open.
What was he like to you? I never knew Dr. Freehoff.
Well, he was just a tremendous personality, absolutely brilliant. I recall that I needed, anytime I wanted to make a speech, and had to make a speech, I always called him for a top line, how to start something. He would give me something up. He would quote me a poem. He would do this. He would, within minutes. I recall walking into his office once when he was 90-some years old, and he was reading some tremendously involved book. I said, "Doctor, what are you doing? At 80, 92, what are you doing?" So I have to improve my mind at this particular point.
Mm-hmm.
And when he would give his annual bar mitzvah speech in August, without a note, he would first give a speech and then end up with a poem.
Mm-hmm.
And every word was just so meaningful. If it were not for the fact that you don't applaud at a temple, I swear we'd have given him a standing ovation.
Yeah. So as in your position, you were probably seeing him more than most people.
Oh, yes. And also, during my years as president, we had many outstanding speakers, and I had the opportunity to introduce them or go to dinner with them and learn from them. And then on the board of the UAHC, I'm with Schindler and Danny Syme and David Saperstein, Donald Day, all these people. I recall when the first union biennial I attended in Cleveland, I was a member of the junior congregation, took the train down to Cleveland with Dr. Freehoff and his wife, and we didn't know what to expect. But after the first day and the speeches, we would forego dinner to get to the ballroom to get into the front row to sit here.
Mm-hmm.
In order to make sure that we got into that room and listened to these giants in every corner.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Robert L.L. Silver, Freehoff, all the top people along the line.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. I know all the names you're mentioning.
Oh, sure.
Have to have been very positive. Was Mrs. Freehoff also?
Oh, she was very talented, and is a talented woman. She wrote books.
Yeah, children's books.
Children's books.
Mm-hmm.
Did you socialize at all with these?
We took them to dinner, and we would meet them, and there were dinners held in different places and different homes to which we were invited. Freehoffs were there. We always mixed and mingled with them.
So you really had a very personal relationship.
Oh, yes. I could call them at any time. And they always called me my boy, even though it was grandfather. Said, my boy, what do you want today?
That's kind of a nice feeling, I would imagine. You had said last time that you would be ready to give over the reins of leadership to young people in our Jewish community, rather than staying on boards indefinitely in the young people now. Do you think they today would want to assume?
Oh, yes.
Do the young people want to assume? Because at one point we were talking, I heard things of people, young people not wanting to be in organizations and so forth. And I wondered, how would you motivate them to come in, to do the kinds of things you did? You really gave a lot of time and effort.
I think it starts when they get on certain boards at a certain level. But when I look around today and see the leadership of the Federation, see the leadership of the temples and so forth, there's a younger element coming in. The JCC was all done by young people. Their fundraising and all the things that are going on, the budgeting and so forth. UJF has David Shapiro. I mean, he's a young man. And the home now is in a little bit of a problem, but they're going to come out of it. They're going to have a new board and a new president. I understand that none of the past presidents are going to be on the executive committee anymore. With that in mind, did you know that they're looking to different leadership?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've been asked to be on the board for a 2-year term. I'm old, but they want, I guess, some people who have not been presidents to come on and maybe have some impact.
What do you think motivates young people today to do take over these kinds of reins? What would you do? I mean, you were active, but is there something that you would see that perhaps the Jewish community should be doing to motivate young people to come in and take over and new ideas, new activities?
Well, the only thing I can tell you is that you have to make it clear to the people that because they are in positions of leadership, they don't have to give money. I think you have to be directed to the fact, look, we want you to be president, and we don't expect you to be the leader in giving. You will eventually do that, but right now we need your expertise. I don't care what your gift is. I think if you make that as part of the direction, I think you'll get more leaders. Mm-hmm. What happens is that the young people think, I can't take the position because I can't give this $2,000 or $5,000 or so. But if you ask people to take over these positions and make it clear to them that their level of giving is not important, it's their level of time, and eventually they'll give, I think that would be one of the directions that they should take to bring younger people into. Because another thing is the ability for time. I mean, the young person today is torn. If he has 2 or 3 children in college, I mean, it's costing him $60,000 a year after taxes, you know, to send those kids to school. And he says, I have to work. I can't take this position because it's too much time. You also have to limit the number of meetings. And you have to be sure that a meeting starts at 8 and finishes at 10 and doesn't go on forever and ever. And the president has to be in a position to say, thank you for your thoughts, but I'm going to have to ask you to turn over something to somebody else.
Have you shared these views with some of the groups that you've worked with?
Well, sure, on the board, but on the various boards, our board of trustees that wrote it now has dropped in age dramatically. I'm not on JCC. I think it's going to be that way at the home. School for Advanced Jewish Studies has young people on it too. The American Jewish Committee does a fine job with young people. Mm-hmm. The older people have been dropped off, that's all. They're honoraries or something like that. They can come if they want. UJF. You can see that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. I know you talked last time that you felt, we asked about your accomplishments, and you said, well, one of the greatest accomplishments being children. Were there other things that you see as, and the awards that you've gotten for various things that you've got, are there other things that you see that you really feel, hey, I feel good about this, I accomplished it?
Well, I've just taken my place, that's all. Mm-hmm. I'm taking my place in the community.
Mm-hmm.
People call on me for help, whether it's money or time, and if I'm in a position to do so, I do it. And I feel that, that when asked to do things, I will do it to the best of my ability, time-wise. Came to Exodus. I mean, I'm hoping to retire and so forth, and yet I talked to Adele, and I said, Adele, you know, we have to help these people. And I said, we may not be able to take that vacation or do this or do that, but this is more important. And taking my place in the community is not an accomplishment. I think it's what people should be doing. When they hide and when they don't want to be counted, that diminishes everybody. We know that when you hide and you don't do your share, someone else has to do more, and that's not fair to that other person. And I also feel that when people are taken advantage of anywhere, that everybody suffers. I think Martin Luther King said that injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We look at things, and we were very upset with the missile, with the war. Mm-hmm. Well, I bought an American flag pin, stuck it on my lapel. And when I went to the Florida a couple weeks ago, and I passed a store that had these American flags. If you've watched any basketball at all, you've seen all the boys have an American flag on their shirt. I had one sewed on my tennis shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
In contrast to Martin Luther King was Golda Meir's comment that a Arab mother's heart bleeds just as much as a Jewish mother's heart when their son is killed.
Of course, of course. And we were very lucky with the war, let me tell you.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe that this guy would capitulate so quickly, and that we overestimated him. Yeah. Absolutely overestimated his ability.
Yeah.
And he didn't use non-conventional weapons.
Mm-hmm.
What he'll do in the future, I don't know.
What do you see in terms of the future for Israel?
It's going to be a difficult time. I saw in this morning's paper that some general had said that he ought to talk about giving back some territory, and all of a sudden,
Golan
Heights. Again.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to admit that Golan Heights, with today's missiles and so forth, it really doesn't mean that much. But you can't have an enemy with its guns playing right at you on top of the hill.
Are there any things that you have thought about that you would like to say?
You've talked so much. There isn't very much.
I think we're just about at the end.
And we're at the end of another tape.
Would you like to comment on the Jewish Chautauqua Society?
Oh, yes. I've been a member of the Jewish Chautauqua Society from the day that I became active in Brotherhood, just a long time ago. And this is the organization which funds the rabbis to go to the colleges and give accredited courses in Judaism to Jews and non-Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And we have about 126 lectureships throughout the United States.
And there's one at Duquesne, I
believe. There's one at Duquesne. There's one at Chatham. There will be one at there's one at Pittsburgh Theological Seminary in this general area. In addition, we have what we call the one-day output, where a rabbi goes to Westminster or to Wheeling or here or there and speaks on the Judaic problem to all the students in the religion department.
So you have to be very proud of those.
Is this an award?
You have have one yet. The Union.
Well, this is an award, but it's an award given when you buy 10, when you have accomplished 10 life memberships, you become a fellow. So that's as a result of money. That's not an honor.
Which is the honor?
The honor is that one up top as a Parnasakal on the right.
Mm-hmm. From school.
From the School of Advanced Jewish Studies. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's given any of those to any of the additional presidents. Mm-hmm. Dr. Kessler and I got along very well, and when I left as my term of president, Father McAnulty came up.
Oh, really?
I was teaching at Duquesne then, and he presented it to me with the efforts of Dr. Kessler.
That's interesting. And this Chautauqua Society lectureship.
Yes, that was when we had a special event here in Pittsburgh, and in my honor, and they were able to raise $55,000, and we set up the lectureship at Chatham in my honor.
I see.
And that girls sent me that.
Was that a yearly, annual lectureship?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
Well, I think that we are going to have to end on this note because the tape is about finished.
Yeah.
So we want to thank you
very, very much.
It
was just
for a wonderful interview.
Yes.
I think we both learned an enormous amount.
Yes.
And we're very grateful you gave up your time. Yes.
Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you very much.
Now I have to get back to work. Huh?
Yeah.